Seen you locked and changed, didn't ease my pain. Left me feeling ashamed out in the rain. Can't explain the pain, how I stay sane. Don't like the game, will it ever change?
Greetings, everyone. I am Dr. Tommy Watson, and welcome to another episode of Resilient Stories Podcast, where we share the grit and glory behind the stories of amazing people like you who have bounced back from adversity and failure to go to live their best lives on purpose. Today's show is being sponsored by $1 Million Business Pathway. We believe everyone has a story to tell and sell. If you want to learn how to tell and sell your story, go to tawatson.com under the program and products link and click on $1 Million Business Pathway to get yourself started. So, folks, are you guys ready for another amazing episode today? Joining me, I have the one and only Jen Nash. Good morning, Jen. How are you?
I am well. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk to you.
It is a pleasure to have you on the show. And for my listening audience who may not necessarily know who you are, why don't you tell them about your new book that I think you just released, right?
I did. You can see it in the background. I'll grab it. It's called the Big Power of Tiny Connections. Wow. And it's how small interactions spark awesome outcomes. Wow. And it's a really positive, it's half story, half how-to book that really helps people lean into getting more of what I think is the greatest thing in life, connection.
Wow.
So that's exciting.
Oh, that's awesome. So Jen, if people want to get a hold of you and pick up your book, what's the best place to do that?
So you can grab the book on Amazon, The Big Power of Tiny Connections, Barnes & Noble, or just, you know, if you want to support local, ask your bookstore to order it in for you and they'll get it in. Barnes & Noble has a great look inside so you can get a sense of what it's like, because it's literally half really fun stories and half, you know, step-by-step practical advice that really helps people get more out of life and get more out of all the little moments when you could be connecting. And you can also go to jennash.com. jennash.com/books will give you a link. Super easy. JennNash. Yeah. Thank you so much for letting me do that shout out.
Get out there and support Jen. Get that book. What a great title. I love it. So Jen, as you know, Resilient Stories Podcast really brings amazing people like you and have you kind of talk us through some of your, you know, most difficult times. And I mean, wow, you as a teenager, you went through a lot. You know, you lived in 10 different locations. Your father committed suicide by the time you're 18 years old. And I just mentioned to you before that, you know, recently, unfortunately, we just had the former Miss America commit suicide as well. For those of us who may not necessarily be familiar with a lot of that type of lifestyle, the bouncing around, moving around, and then having that tragic end take place in a person's life, tell us a little bit about how things got started for you. How did you end up living in 10 different places? What's the backstory there?
So my dad was Australian and my mom was American, and they met in Canada, and I am first generation Canadian. Wow. And so they bounced around Canada until I was six. And then we were living in Montreal at that time. And my dad got a job in running Alcan Asia. And Alcan is a really big aluminum company, or aluminium, as the Canadians say. And it's like Reynolds Wrap. They make everything from spaceships to, you know, window sidings. And so he took us to Malaysia, and we were in Malaysia for almost a year. And then we moved back to Montreal, packed up everything, and moved to Hong Kong. And I lived in Hong Kong till I was 10. And then I moved to Tokyo until I was 15. My grades started taking a nosedive because, believe it or not, I was going to school all in French, but I was a very passionate English reader. I loved words and I loved to read and write in English, which doesn't support speaking French and writing French well. So I actually spent grade 8 in school in Canada. So then I was flying back and forth there without my family. They still stayed in Japan. And then we moved to Sydney. And my dad, when we moved to Sydney, had started to become sick. So he was diagnosed with manic depression very late in life. It was triggered by hepatitis C. Wow. So apparently there are some types of people who have dormant manic depression, because he was a normal, awesome dad until that time. And then he started getting very manic. I don't know if most people know what that is, but you know, they're very speedy sometimes, and then they can't get out of bed for weeks. So it's one or the other, you know, the opposite ends of the energetic spectrum. Mm-hmm. And so we moved back to Canada when he changed jobs after 22 years, and we moved to Ottawa, Ontario. And I finished high school there, and he went and got treatment. He was, you know, in a hospital. He checked himself in for many months. And then when he came out, it was the end of summer, and he just psychologically couldn't face another Canadian winter. As you can imagine, it's utterly beautiful in Canada, but very cold, and it's dark and it's blustery. So he said to my family, all right, I'm going to go back and spend time with my Australian family and spend time in the sunshine, because December is summer in Australia. So my mom, you know, had two kids in high school in Canada. Her focus was on just getting us through. And she was very worried about my dad. So she just said, okay, honey, whatever you want. And so he went back to Australia and never came back. So he killed himself on April Fool's Day, which, I mean, as a kid, I thought that's dad saying, you know, so long and being funny, because he was a funny guy. But I think he also thought this was very ironic, because my dad was a very together person. You know, on one side of the spectrum, my mom, who I unfortunately take after in terms of the like cyclone of messiness, like I'm an artist and everything's always sort of going pigpen style. My dad would have his socks folded and everything just looked, you know, so organized and together. Like if we took a really long flight, he would get off and go for a 15-mile run. You know, and so he was, you know, one opposite of end of the spectrum to my mom. And so it was shocking to have his life, I think, be derailed so completely by something he couldn't control.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that really threw him.
Wow, that is so unfortunate. I really appreciate your transparency and honesty and sharing that, you know, because, you know, we hear a lot about in our society, you know, families and individuals dealing with mental health issues, and talked about the suicide piece as well. You know, so being that family member who had to, I mean, you experienced this as a teenager, I mean, losing your father in that way, talk to, so the folks who may not necessarily know about or had experiences with a family member engaged in suicide, what are the feelings that kind of go into a situation like that when you lose your father or a family member in that manner?
You know, it's taken me a lot of time to really process where I was at. So think about it. I'm 2 months away from graduating high school. I went to a pretty fancy high school because this is funny, actually, because of the school system being different in Australia to North America. If I had just gone to the regular high school, it would have taken me 3 more years to get out of high school. I would have been in my 20s because my family had moved so much. So my mom talked my way into a fancy high school that let me skip grade 11. And so I did grade 12 and grade 13, because Canada used to have another year, which was applied to college.
Okay.
But so you only had to do college for 3 years. I mean, it makes sense, unless you go to an American college, which I did, and then you do another 4 years. So I think I was at this school 2 months away from graduating, and looking back, I was racked with shame. I was racked with shame that my father had done this, that our family was left, and I did not deal well with any condolences. I actually went to the principal after like the second day and said, can you tell all the teachers to stop giving me their condolences? And I do not want anyone to know. And so I told no one. Yeah. I didn't tell my friends. I kept it a secret. Wow. And it's funny because now I'm like, wow, that's crazy. The day of his memorial service, I was in a fashion show. You know how like high schools have fashion shows and stuff? I was in a fashion show, and I think I was so disassociated from the experience. I remember slicing my leg open while I was shaving my legs because I was in a short skirt, and it, you know, April, it's still cold in Canada. Sure. So I was shaving my legs, and I gave myself a huge gash which was literally pouring blood. And I just got it to stop before I walked down the runway. And I remember thinking, this is all very surreal. But I brought back all the flowers from the memorial service because I love flowers. And they were so many and they were going to toss them. And I was like, no, don't toss the flowers. I filled my room with flowers and still told no one. Like I didn't tell my roommates, like I didn't tell the people on my floor. I said that I had gone to an event and then I could take the flowers home. So I was in shock. Like I remember doing laundry and not knowing where my laundry was a week later. And so, you know, when you reflect on that as an adult, excuse me, as an adult, you realize, oh yeah, I was in shock. Yeah. And I think it's fascinating that for me, I went to shame and I just was like, my whole focus was, I got to graduate from high school. Sure. I don't have time for these emotions. I don't have time to process this. I just got to keep going.
Yeah.
You know, in hindsight, probably not the healthiest, but at the same time, you do what you can. You do the best you can.
So that doesn't make sense. Absolutely. I can relate to that to a degree as well. You know, so what did you turn to kind of cope with dealing with the situation here? What, I mean, how did you cope with it?
So I was really lucky that year for grade 13, I had started doing jiu-jitsu, a certain type of Japanese martial arts. Mm-hmm. Didn't see this coming, did you?
Absolutely.
And there was something very grounding about going and learning to spar and fight with other people in a way that was partially Zen, because it is the art of using the circle and the other person's force against them. Mm-hmm. And I kept doing that all summer long. I went more frequently. I found more community. You know, my jiu-jitsu instructor was an incredible person who, you know, really helped ground me, and I think was incredibly loving and caring and supportive. And he and I went on to be incredibly close for many years. Sure. Yeah, a truly special person. And so then I went to university, and I think changing the scenery, like I moved to New York City. I utterly fell in love with this town. I just was like, the energy, the art, the people, I adored it. And it took me a couple of years to go get therapy. I was like, I'm going to be messed up potentially around men as a topic for the rest of my life if I don't go get some help. And the really cool thing was, is I had been putting off getting therapy because I couldn't afford it. You know, I thought, oh, that's going to be hundreds of dollars. But someone randomly told me, because I lived in a woman's residence, like a group women's residence, which was super affordable in the West Village at the time. And someone else said, oh, you can get sliding fee therapy. And I said, what's that? They said, you pay based on what you can afford. And I said, what? And they were like, yes, at major hospitals. And so I went to Mount Sinai, which is an incredibly reputable hospital on the East Side, every week, and saw a therapist for 2 years. And she was great. Yeah. And so I think that really helped and grounded me in terms of like, okay, I felt like I'd taken a step to support myself and hopefully my emotional development around something that was so shocking, because I think the darker undertones were financial. You know, when your dad kills himself, you don't think about the fact that your mom is losing her mind about how she's going to pay for stuff. How's she going to pay for college? And my mom was really stoic. Mm-hmm. You know, she just said, no, you can't go there. It's too expensive, or we'll figure it out. But she never shared the concerns. And I think over time, her worry about money probably created, you know, a deeper sense of fear in me, you know, and also like, to some degree, we were abandoned. Like when someone chooses to kill themselves, there's an abandonment that a part of me wanted to rationalize he was sick. He was not okay being sick. I get it. But then there's that child part of us that says, Dad, how could you leave us?
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard to hold space for both of those people. Yeah. And, you know, themselves.
Yeah. You know, I appreciate you being so transparent and honest about that. I think it's gonna be a blessing to a lot of folks out there as well who may be struggling with whether a parent leaves them physically or emotionally or mentally. You know, there are huge repercussions for that. You know, was there a best piece of advice that your therapist gave you? What was the best strategy she gave you to kind of help you move forward?
I don't think there was any sort of one takeaway. You know, and I think that the therapy that I have been doing more recently is probably more helpful, which is, I don't think I realized to the degree to which I put emotions in a box. Sure. And just said, I don't do that anymore.
Sure. Yeah.
But the problem is when we put emotions in a box because we've gone through something really traumatic, you stop feeling a lot of life. You stop feeling the good as well as the bad.
Yeah.
And then you're just on autopilot.
Yeah.
And so what is the point of that?
Yeah.
You know, and Tommy, may I call you Tommy?
Yeah, absolutely.
Uh-huh. Okay. Cause I mean, I can call you Dr. Watson.
whatever you prefer.
But like Tommy, I think it's taken me a long time to realize how being strong and stoic and just powering through probably hurt my relationships throughout my life, because you turn off, right? You know, there's a part of you that's dead because you're protecting so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And again, I appreciate your transparency around that as well. You know, so in your darkest moment there, what kept you going? I mean, why didn't you give up? You kept fighting. Something in you made you keep going. What was it on your darkest day that kept you going, kept you fighting?
You know, I think I'm a really curious person. Mm-hmm. And I talk about this in the book because people say, why do you want to talk to strangers? Why do you want to talk to people you don't know that well, or meet random people, or, you know, go out with your coworkers when you're not in the mood and deepen those connections? Like, why? And honestly, it all comes down to, I am the curious cat. So even when you're really unhappy and you're feeling alone and abandoned and why me, this sucks. There's on the flip side, what could happen? Sure. Where can this story go?
Sure.
What could my outcome be? Mm-hmm. You know, and where will this all take me?
Sure.
You know, and I think that there's such magic in the world when we shift our perspectives and we change how we show up, or we change how we support others, you know. And I think wondering, like, how could this day go differently is very powerful.
Sure. That's a great perspective to have. And I think you're so right on that, you know, as well. So as you sit here today, being successful, Jen Nash, you look back over your life, you know, you moved a lot as a kid. We hear a lot of kids can't handle that, all those moves. And you were moving from different country to country. So you're talking about not even just within a city or a state, but you're moving to a different country in many situations and have to reconnect. So it's ironic that you're writing a book about connection as well. As you look back today, how did you say all, you know, your experience with your father, how has this all shaped you as a person today?
So actually writing the book gave me some really interesting perspective. And I love this question. Thank you so much, Tom. Mm-hmm. You know, I realized that because we moved so much as a teenager, I realized I better make friends fast or they're going to be gone. Like, wow. there was an urgency need naturally built into my personality over time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, your listeners don't know me, but my friends can assure you, I'm a lot of energy. I'm, you know, I'm going, I'm very present, and I'm often very, very there. Hello. Hi. And you know, people often ask, how many cups of coffee have you had? And my response is, I drink decaf. Like this is me.
Right.
And I think some of that presence and some of that urgency was a band-aid, mm-hmm. because, you know, losing your friends is horrible. Absolutely. No 13-year-old is signing up for that.
Yeah.
You know, no 15-year-old who's getting ripped out of school again is excited. Right. You know, I remember writing a murder mystery, and it was about how I was going to kill my dad for moving me.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was angry, you know, I was very angry at 16 for having been moved yet again. Hmm. And, I think the flip side is I need friends. I need them fast. How do I do that? And I'm going to lean into making stronger connections if possible. And I, you know, I have a section in the book that I co-wrote with a friend who is an amazing person when it comes to staying in touch with people. But when I look back, I started writing letters to the kids I babysat when I was 7.
Wow.
Because I missed them. Uh-huh. You know, and so I was writing letters at 8, at 9, at 10. So I got my 10,000 hours of writing, and I have been a writer for most of my career and a content strategist, you know, so like words are very meaningful to me, but I got my 10,000 hours before I was 20.
Wow.
You know, so I wanted to stay connected. Uh-huh. And, you know, it's funny because we're living in a disconnected world right now, but are we? You know, Instagram, Snapchat, you know, TikTok, all of these quick connection tools, they're still real. They're still giving you that serotonin pump of, yes, you know, someone saw me, someone connected with me. So I think it's fascinating how, you know, we have the opportunity more than ever to connect and get that warm, rich feeling. And I know for me, it's super important, especially coming from that childhood place of seriously, mom, seriously, dad, I just lost all my friends again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes total sense. And those connections are vital, you know, vital in our childhood and vital in our adulthood as well.
I'm just curious, did you move a lot as a kid too?
I did. And we moved a lot, and we moved a lot without our parents as well. So we were on our own when we were moving. So we were moving to foster homes where there was no adult that we were familiar with in that location. So I can definitely can feel a piece of your pain in terms of having to move like that as well. But, you know, my final question to you here, Jen, real quick here is, you know, we're coming off a year where people have lost a lot. You know, people have lost material possessions. They've lost finances. They've lost loved ones. And in some situations, Jen, people have lost hope. What words of advice can you give our listeners out there who are saying, hey, you know what, is tomorrow going to get better? What can you tell those folks to hold on, hang in there?
You know, I would tell them to take 3 really deep breaths to really ground themselves in their being, because at the end of the day, the stuff doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I would ask them to think about, where do they find joy? Like, is it in having a cup of coffee with a friend? Is it a phone call that may only last 10 minutes with someone they don't get to talk to very often? And I would encourage them. I mean, it might just be a walk around the block, right? Sure. And I would encourage them to take those 3 deep breaths, ground themselves, and then ask their most resourceful self, what brings me joy? And then I would schedule that joy for no less than once a week.
Yeah.
Because I think those little battery charging moments of joy keep us going. And, you know, for me, it is, you know, connecting with friends and beautiful moments, you know, sunsets. I mean, they're free, but they're hard to find, especially in New York City. You gotta go track them down, you know, but what's bringing them joy? I would encourage them to schedule it and hold space for it, because that's the only way we're going to be able to lean in and get a little more out of life, because it is hard.
Yeah, I agree. And great advice. So folks out there, great advice from Jen Nash. I hope you've been inspired by her story. Let you know that no matter what situation you find yourself in, you can make it out of it. If you stay in there and you stay and persevere and stick and stay, like I like to say a lot. Jen, if people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to get a hold of you again?
Best way to get a hold of me is jennash.com, JenNash.com. There's a contact form. There's links to the books. There's a little bit more about me. And thank you for asking, Tommy.
Absolutely. Folks out there, please reach out to Jen, get a hold of her, get her book, and schedule for coaching and for speaking as well. Hey, Jen, we've talked about some tough stuff. Are you ready to have a little fun?
I am.
All right. This portion of our show is called the Rapid Fire Purpose Questions. I'm going to ask you some questions about purpose. I want you to give me and the audience your most concise answer. You ready?
Okay.
All right. Here we go. Jen, what gives your life meaning?
Joy.
What one word best describes you?
Bold.
Bull?
Bold.
Oh, bold. Okay, got you. Good. I like that. What problem do you want to solve in our world?
Lack of connection.
What was your favorite thing to do as a kid?
Play with animals.
Okay. Toy animals or real animals?
No, real animals.
Really? Okay. I like that. Good. Yeah. What do you wish you had more time to do?
Ooh, goof off.
I love it. What does your 15-year-old self imagine you would be doing right now?
I would be a vet. She was so sure we were going to go to vet school, even though I'm allergic to animals. So,
really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty interesting. Got to get the backstory of that one. Yeah. Who inspires you the most?
People like Oprah, Reese Witherspoon, people that use their platform for love, kindness, and joy, humor. You know, they make people laugh and smile, but they also share stories, you know, probably also Brené Brown, Glennon Doyle. I feel badly that I'm listing a lot of like female white leaders, but yeah, I mean, you know, sorry.
It's the principle that counts. Yeah. I mean, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. What's something about yourself we might be surprised to learn about you?
I toured with the most famous opera company as a child, singing La Boheme in Japan.
Really? Okay. Nice one. I like that. You get one to add to your chart. What's something you want to add to your bucket list within the next year?
Ooh. Well, I booked a facilitation in a fancy foreign destination. So I'm running a group workshop in a beautiful location for an elite group of, you know, pioneering entrepreneurs. So bucket list checking is coming right up. I'm very excited.
That's what I'm talking about. Sounds like a lot of fun there. What's something you'll spend your time doing no matter what?
Connecting with friends.
Okay, good. What do you want your grandchildren to say about you someday?
She's fun. Let's hang out.
Let's hang out. Let's hang out with Granny. If you were a superhero, what would your superpower be?
Ooh, good one. Making people feel fearless.
I like that. What sparks your creativity?
Oh man, I need to get back to my drawing. What sparks my creativity? Beautiful spaces, sunshine, and other people wanting to be creative.
Yeah, amen. I like that. That's good. Jen, if you became president today, what law would you pass first?
Oh man, pay disparity. I think either pay disparity or paid paternity leave for everyone. Like, we are one of the few developed countries in the world that does not actually mandate any kind of paid leave.
Wow.
Paid vacations are not even law. They are in the rest of the world, but not in the United States.
You would get my vote. You get my vote. I'm sure you get many votes out there. If you could follow someone around for a day, who would it be and why?
Oh, it would definitely be Oprah.
Okay.
Good. I mean, she's amazing. She's interesting. She's probably really, really busy, even though she's retired. And she's got such an interesting heart and such a huge insight into how the world lives. Mm-hmm. Like just to get a little of her wisdom would be amazing.
I love it. I love it. What do you love to do for others?
Yeah, I love to inspire them and to encourage them to be their bigger, bolder selves.
I love it. What's been the best compliment you've ever received?
That I really show up as my true self all the time.
That's an amazing compliment, absolutely. What's been the one thing you have never been afraid to do?
Probably public speaking.
Okay. It's been a natural.
Yeah.
What moment from your childhood are you most proud of?
Not killing my brother.
Okay. What's your brother's name?
Daniel.
Daniel, you got lucky there, buddy. All right.
Yeah.
What does success look like for you?
Freedom, pretty much. Freedom to schedule, freedom to teach when I want to teach, to speak when I want to teach, and freedom to travel and connect with work and love. Mm-hmm. I love freedom and sunlight.
Yeah, I love it. What are you most grateful for?
I'm most grateful. I believe you choose your parents. I'm most grateful for the choices I made with regards to my parents.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Great job. What's been the biggest lesson you have learned in life?
Oh, that's a hard one. The biggest lesson I've learned in life. That 90% of the things that I think are urgent are not.
Yeah.
And asking yourself, is this really urgent, can create a powerful shift in your whole day.
Yeah.
And take your stress levels down and really help you like get back into your body.
Yes, I love it. I love it. And last but not least, Jen, how do you want to be remembered in history?
As someone who supported connection and joy.
Wow. Jen, you survived. Give yourself a round of applause. Awesome job, Jen. Folks out
Thank
there,
you.
Be sure to connect with Jen. Follow Jen. Again, Jen, if people want to connect with you again, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
JenNash.com. Thank you.
Awesome. So, Jen, as we're going to wrap things up, I want to share this with you. Our show focuses on two things, resiliency and purpose. Mm-hmm. What last words can you leave our listening audience out there with around resiliency and purpose?
Every day, even a tiny step in the direction that brings you joy sparks the world around you. So take even the smallest step.
Yes, I love it. Small steps matter. So they folks do. Out there, we got to thank Jen for coming on the show. Hey, if you're someone out there, you have an amazing story of overcoming, we want to hear from you. Please go to tawatson.com, share the story. Subscribe to our podcast, Resilient Stories. Download this episode, rate it, share with your folks on social media. And everyone else out there, we want to thank you for joining us today. Everyone else out there, Jen, thank you very much.
Yours truly,
everyone, peace.
Dr. Watson.